started. Welcome to the 2023 anime year in review. So the idea of this panel is, as anime is getting more and more mainstream and popular, we get more and more content, and there's a lot of stuff that people miss. And so we're going to sort of go over a whole bunch of things that happened last year in anime. Real quick, our panelists. My name is Pete. I am the host of the Wasting Anime Podcast. I love covering a bunch of different anime content throughout the years. I've been doing this for about 5 years. So if you're interested in anime podcasts, feel free to check us out. Joining me is Tony and Mikey. I don't know if you guys want to say anything.
I'm not actually a hater. Sorry, Pete.
He's lying. He is a hater.
Straighter.
I like a lot of anime. I watched a lot of anime for this. I really did. No joke. I was like mainlining all sorts of stuff over the past month. It's been a fun ride getting back more into anime and things again. So yeah, that's my story.
Just hit my water bottle.
Hi everybody, I am Mikey, otherwise known as Mikey Shiota on most social media platforms. I also do a podcast, but right now it is currently on hiatus. It's been on hiatus for a while, but one day we'll come back. It's called Anime Baby. I host it with my buddy Ryan sitting in the corner right here. And we, before it went on hiatus, we talk about a new anime each and every month, and we've gotten up to like 50 episodes, not including like bonus stuff. But otherwise, since the hiatus, I've been mostly just on Twitter, just rambling about stuff like Pretty Cure, Yuri, and AEW wrestling. So yeah, that's pretty much what I've been doing.
Move this out of your way.
All right, and so sort of what we're going to be going over is some of the top stories and headlines throughout the year. Mikey's going to be covering some Yuri and Pretty Cure content as well. Towards the end, we'll be doing like our top 10 anime of the year. So if anyone's looking for recommendations, we'll give you our thoughts. If you like what we're saying, you can kind of gravitate towards those anime. Throughout the panel, there will be trivia questions. We have prizes up there for you to select from if you get it correct. Also towards the end, we will ask, if we have time, the audience, if you want to come up and tell us some of your favorite anime from the year, you can pick over whatever the prizes that we have. So, and we also will be talking about some shows that will be coming up that maybe you should put on your radar that we're really looking forward to. So, without further ado, just like most anime, you start with the opening. And there was one in particular that took over the internet last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To say the least. Kind of a banger.
So instead of saying, has anybody heard the song? Has anyone not heard Idol? So Idol sort of took over the music world, especially for anime openings. As of currently right now, there's over 400 million views on YouTube. Just for reference, the most listened to OP, anime OP ever, was Unravel from Tokyo Ghoul at 175 million. So this is a show that came out in April and it's already doubled it. So give you the grand scheme of how big of a cultural impact Idol was. It's the eighth most viewed music video in the world since 2023. So I mean, it's on par with Taylor Swift, Bad Bunny, those types of like mega superstars. So give you an idea of kind of how big Idol was for the anime industry. And also, as of right now, it has over 300 million streams on Spotify. That's the 101st most popular song ever on Spotify.
And also,
we had a pretty big cultural impact moving into not just anime, but sort of using it in performances. So this is Avant-Garde from America's Got Talent. Cross your fingers, it loads.
Sick. Well,
hold on.
Drop it down to like, yeah. Go for it.
Will it work? Will it work?
I don't know.
Good there enough. We go.
Well, we'll ensure.
It just auto defaulted back to it, so it must be like your preference.
Mm. Yeah, I'm sure it is. Oh, well. Yeah, okay. Never mind.
Well, just trust me that they do a performance of the idol on America's Got Talent. So kind of shows you how big of an impact.
Forgot to. We'll take it. Yeah.
You're so close.
I wonder what Stern thinks of it.
You get the idea.
Yeah. Sorry. Look it up on their official YouTube later.
So moving on to shows, there was one in particular that had a massive cultural impact that ended in 2023, and that is Attack on Titan, the final season.
Yeah. Finally.
And we promise it's the final season.
The real season.
So, with Attack on Titan, it became only the second anime to crash the Crunchyroll servers. That's how popular this is. Fun fact, if anyone's wondering what the other one was, is ReZero Season 2.
Wow. Didn't even know that.
Those are the only two that did it. It was met with pretty well praise. If anybody has ever been on social media before and remember when the Attack on Titan 139 chapter dropped, it is a top five social media day of all time. We got amazing posts criticizing the manga itself. However, we did not get this with the anime, so it was nice to see that Attack on Titan, at least in terms of the anime, went out with a pretty well received. Just for reference, the chapter 139 poll of about 16,000 votes. This is how people viewed the last chapter, so you can see that it's pretty wide range of how people felt how the show ended, the manga ended, and we didn't really get that with the anime. So, gotta give props where props is due. A manga that has sold 140 million copies finally ended its reign, and whether you like Attack on Titan or not, I think it goes unprecedented with how well received the anime and the property itself is within the anime community, and sent it out with its farewell goodbye. However, this led into some controversy. The studio MAPPA.
Mm-hmm.
If you aren't familiar with MAPPA, they're the studios behind Jujutsu Kaisen, Attack on Titan, sort of the last half of it, and some Hell's Paradise. So, if you're unfamiliar with MAPPA, we all know that animators get treated pretty poorly, and MAPPA took it to a whole other level.
The situation was made especially difficult to understand because MAPPA made their animators sign non-disclosure agreements, meaning that they aren't allowed to discuss the inner workings of the studio or their production processes. But even in spite of this, the animators took to social media to speak out and vent their frustrations in both cryptic and pretty overt ways. Yes, this is a girl tying a noose around her neck.
Yeah. So, normally with non-disclosure agreements within the anime sphere, especially with animators, it's revolving around the properties that you're working on, not your actual work conditions you signed NDAs for. So, this is something almost unseen that we've seen within the anime community, where animators working at MAPPA are lashing out sort of against their workforce with how overworked they are. So, see, these are some of the tweets made by the employees. The last one is the episode director of MAPPA, who worked for 3 days straight on Attack on Titan. So,
jeez,
it was some next level stuff that we have really not seen in an anime, which leads us to our first trivia question.
Trivia time.
So, whoever raises their hand first, I'm going to do my best to see it. But, unironically, which studio did animators break off from to form MAPPA due to overworking and poor conditions? I saw it in the back.
Madhouse?
It is.
Hey!
Madhouse.
Yep. Come on up.
So, kind of very ironic that leaving a studio because of poor working conditions only to one of their old bosses. So.
Yeah, started by Masao Maruyama, and I believe the name actually stands for like Maruyama Animation something,
pick
production
like.
Something or another. And Maruyama actually has another studio that he formed called M2,
yes,
which did another series last year that we'll be talking about. Definitely.
Yep.
All right, so that's some of the anime properties themselves. Tony's going to take over and do some of the fun industry stuff that happened throughout the year.
Hello, everyone. This isn't going to be near. Okay, so our first clip here was, of course, the classic from the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade of Luffy.
Bucket Hat Luffy.
Bucket Hat Luffy. This was a fun day on the internet because it hit a tree branch. Yeah, that was a fun day on the internet. There was fan art of that with Luffy with the incredible bucket hat there. How it started, how we're going. Other big news, we had Best Buy announce the end of Blu-ray and DVD sales in their store and on their website. And a pretty big blow to the world of physical media in general, but especially anime. Because with anime, we really only have right stuff anymore that is even stocking a lot of everything in Amazon, and more consolidation is not a good thing, really. So we'll see how this pans out. Probably not going to be great. Speaking of Crunchyroll and right stuff, not last year, but the year before, Crunchyroll announced that they would be buying right stuff. And this year, this past year, a couple months ago, they shut down Right Stuff, and then it became the Crunchyroll store. They still have the warehouse out in Iowa where Right Stuff is out of, and they still ship things from there, and it seems like the transition's been fine from things that I ordered, but it just kind of sucks to see Right Stuff, something that's been an institution in anime for as long as I've been a fan, go away. So, next up we have some new manga services and manga closures here. Speaking of Crunchyroll, they shut down their Crunchyroll manga app. And there was a new service from Shueisha come out called Manga Plus. But the really weird one is K-Manga. They have a weird credit system where you have to like watch ads and stuff in order to read chapters, right?
Yeah, it's, if you're familiar with like webtoons, it's kind of similar to that.
Yeah.
Except like 10 times the price.
Yeah, and like you. Price. Yeah, and you can't like pay a flat subscription or anything. You got to do the weird monetization system for that. So, not a great service in that regard. And I believe they pulled a lot of their manga off of Azuki, which was where they were before. And now you have to do this weird song and dance in order to read anything on there. Annoying. This is a weird one I found here. So the Japanese Government Agency for Cultural Affairs, they had a list of the top 10 manga piracy websites on an official government website, and it was live for a day. Yeah, so they're fighting pretty hard to stop piracy, but in the process of doing it, they ironically had a free list of piracy for you to go check out. Yeah, I laughed when I read through that.
Here's all the perfectly legal DVD shops you can
yeah,
buy anime from.
All the legal cat shops and things. And then we had Viz Manga actually raise their manga prices for the first time in 15 years, which kind of interesting that happened, I thought. Okay, and now here's another one here. So, in September, I want to say it was, Tokyo Lab announced that they were going to be closing down. And what that means is that a ton of film masters for not just anime, but a lot of live-action Japanese movies were going to be lost to time and thrown out, because that's kind of how things work in Japan. Like if a film lab shuts down or something like that, all the masters would be destroyed. I know that there was like masters for Dragon Ball and things like that in there. But in December, I believe it was, Toho announced that they would be taking over management of the archive, and nothing was thrown away, which we dodged a massive bullet there in terms of film preservation and anime preservation. So that is excellent news. That made my day. More MAPPA! All right. So, there was an interview with their CEO where they said that despite being a massive hit, Yuri on Ice made them almost no money. So if anyone's hoping for more Yuri on Ice, you're not getting it. Sorry.
Or Zombieland.
Or Zombieland Saga. That ain't happening, boys.
I mean, they're still planning that movie.
We don't know.
In theory.
In theory.
They
announced that project, but nothing has came of it since the last trailer.
So, fun fact about MAPPA, that they announced two movies, the Zombieland Saga movie and the Yuri on Ice Adolescence movie, and they both pulled them from their website on future projects and just have never released a statement about it. So, it's pretty safe to assume that both of those projects are more than likely dead in the water, but we will see. Only time will tell.
Yeah, I'm gonna guess that they're probably donezo. And then we also had another anime milestone, kind of, for music here. We had the opening for Chainsaw Man here, Kickback, get RIAA Gold certification, which was the first Japanese language track to ever achieve such a thing, which, pretty cool. Never would have imagined that happening when I became a fan in 2004 or so. 2003, whatever. And then, of course, we had to talk about a couple unfortunate creator deaths and industry people who passed away. So we'll move on to some of that here. First of all, we had Leiji Matsumoto, the creator of Space Pirate Captain Harlock, Galaxy Express 3-9, Queen Emeraldus. We had the... I didn't write down the name of the creator of Haven't You Heard of Sakamoto and Median Dolly pass away as well. We had the creator of Space Adventure Cobra and Goku Midnight Eye pass away as well. And I mean, we're jumping ahead a little here, but we gotta be remiss here and not mention the GOAT, Akira Toriyama, passing away a couple weeks ago here. Legendary, absolutely legendary person. His work, massive impact on everything anime and manga related. Yeah, what's this?
This is the cheapish one that you talked
about.
Oh yeah, I remember now.
And we had another controversy happen. G-Witch, yeah, they're not gay, folks. They're not gay.
They're up to interpretation.
Up to interpretation. That's what Bandai Namco is saying. So, do you want to talk more about that?
Yeah. So, with Gundam Witch from Mercury, it was a series that got super, super popular, like, amongst, like, fans who weren't even fans of Gundam, mainly for the main couple, Mirine and Saleta, because of just how perfect they are together, and the whole series has been building and building up to them getting married, getting together. I mean, from episode one, Saleta becomes Mirine's fiancé, and that was pretty much the big plot in the entire series, and we get to this moment, like, we don't get any obvious stuff like an I love you or a kiss or anything like that, but we see the wedding rings, we see how close they are, we even hear Saleta's sister say, call Mirine her sister-in-law, and everyone's like, okay, they're married now. Perfect, amazing. And then, like, God, what was it, like a month or so later, folks at Bandai Namco were all like, oh no, they are up to interpretation. We officially can't say they are married. Though the thing that makes it better in the end is that the director for the series did an interview for one of the Blu-rays. I think it was like the last Blu-ray that came out, and he outright says, like, oh yeah, they're married. They're totally married.
Just totally goes against the company brass. You'll love to see it.
Pretty much telling them to go interpret themselves.
We have a question in the back.
What series is this?
This is Gundam Witch from Mercury.
Yeah, it was a pretty big controversy at the time.
Another trivia question, so get ready. Which Shakespeare play is G-Witch based on?
Ooh.
Ooh.
Anybody know any Shakespeare plays?
Yeah.
Macbeth. It is not Macbeth.
Not that. Yeah.
It is not Taming of the Shrew. It is the Tempest.
Dang.
Hey,
we got it.
Come on up.
Suleta's mom is literally named Lady Prospera. If you've ever read the Tempest, it was pretty easy to put two and two together. But there's some little fun facts about the Tempest at G-Witch. Yep. Feel free to pick anything that is left over.
And if you want the DVDs, you can take both of them.
So here's a statement from the director of G-Witch, pretty much claiming, oh sorry, this is confirming that it's the Tempest. My apologies, wrong quote. I'm gonna pass over to Mikey for any of our Yuri and
Yuri Corner.
All right, so since I'm the designated Yuri expert here, 2023 was a really, really big year for Yuri. Like, it felt like almost every season last year just like had one or two series that were either outright Yuri or just kind of like Yuri adjacent. And just even looking at some of these on screen right here, like we had Stardust Telepath, we had I'm in Love with the Villainess, we had like even Pretty Cure, like which is like, it's like Pretty Cure is not explicitly Yuri, but you see the way the girls interact with each other, how they're like always holding hands and telling them that they love them. Like, it's pretty clear that they're kind of implying something like that. But also the fact that like we even had like some more stuff, such as, but not limited to, we had Vexations of a Shut-In Vampire Princess. We also had Yuri Is My Job, which was like one of my personal favorites, or like what I'm cosplaying right now. Bang Dream, It's My Go, that's also another like Yuri adjacent series, or even something like Birdie Wing, Season 2, which was very, very over on social media.
Everyone likes the gay golf.
Yeah.
Anything else?
And, it feels like, at least for me personally, like, it couldn't have come at a more perfect time, because, like, at the end of the previous year, 2022, that's when I started to really, really started getting into like more Yuri manga, and then like as soon as 2023 hit, I just got like blasted with like all of these. I'm just all like, oh yeah, I'm eating good, and like the Yuri inner circle that I'm a part of on Twitter, it's like they're all just like hooting and hollering about like how crazy it is that we just got all of these shows this past year.
Yeah. So with that, we're gonna move into our personal anime of the year. Just a heads up, we're used to do like our top 10 that we did. I watched something like 68 seasonals last year, so hopefully you appreciate my list. I also have a system where if shows didn't actually finish, they're not actually on my list. I call it the Darling in the Franks effect, where it's a show where I was so invested, spoiler alert, only to have the main character turn into a spaceship. So to make sure that I get the full understanding, shows like Free Ren and Apothecary Diaries, which were just absolute juggernauts of shows since they had finished in 2023, didn't make my list, but if you come next year, they'll more than likely be on my list. Also, this is supposed to give recommendations for somebody who, like me, who has watched a ton of seasonal anime throughout the year. 2023 was one of the best years of anime I've ever experienced. I don't know if anybody else is a big seasonal watcher, but we had just massive hits every season, where sometimes it's overwhelming to consume so much content. So starting with my list, my number 10 was Handyman in Another World. If you're a fan of Dungeons & Dragons, this is a show I would definitely recommend to anybody. Where a lot of times in Isekai, we get like the overpowered level 1 cheat guy, and it's kind of a repetitive story. With Handyman in Another World, it's essentially what if the main character was a support character instead of being the overpowered guy. So he can like fix tools, and if you're a fan of like slice of life and fantasy, this is one I would definitely recommend. Also going on to another slice of life fantasy is Campfire Cooking in Another World. Currently airing now, if you are watching Dungeon Meshi or Delicious in Dungeon, this is a very tamer version of that. Lots of gourmet, lots of meals being created, and it also had my favorite character of the entire year, a slime named Sui, who is absolutely adorable, and the show is a blast. Number 8 was Skippin' Loafer.
Yeah!
Yes, so we have some big Skippin' Loafer fans in the stands. So one thing that really gravitated towards me with Skippin' Loafer is handling one of the characters in the show is transgender, which is really not shown a lot in anime, especially in the way where it's not made as a joke or a punchline. It was handled really well. And that was one thing that really stood out to me, along with just, if you're a fan of coming-of-age stories, it's about a girl who lives in rural Japan wanting to be a political person later on in the future and coming to Tokyo and trying to figure out city life. So it does have some similar themes that you've seen a lot in like slice of life anime, but just handling some of the tougher themes of like gender identity and stuff like that, I thought was really well done. Number 7 for all my romance fans out there is Insomniacs After School.
Yes.
Okay. Also ended up being one of my favorite manga I've ever read.
sort of the premise is two kids who can't sleep and coming together over that and then bonding a relationship. And you kind of find out the reason why they can't sleep ends up being like very heartwarming and very touching. And if you are a fan of romance, I cannot express this enough. Watch or read Insomniacs After School. Number six is Spy Family. I think most people, if you ever watch Spy Family, it's just super fun. Anya is my favorite gremlin in anime history.
She's up there.
Every time she goes waku waku, I pop. Like, I'm sorry. It's very simple, but it's straight to the point. It doesn't hide who it is. Number five, Jujutsu Kaisen. For all my shonen heads out there, just pure action the entire season. There were some pacing issues, but I mean, we talked about MAPPA in the past. They killed it in like everything this year. Usually a show that I don't necessarily gravitate towards too, I was hooked from Jujutsu Kaisen season 2. It was incredible. Number four, this is a show I don't think many people have watched or even heard of. It's on Netflix. It's called Uku in the Inner Chambers. So the idea of it is like 1600 Japan, but what if the shogun was a woman? And sort of what it is there's a disease where 80% of the men are killed off. So women are completely in power and the shogun is a woman. And sort of the perspective of, you know, a lot of times we get this historical anime, what if we made like a fantasy setting around it with women being in power and sort of how the world would look differently. Like, for instance, you know, having 100 concubines all being men, going to the red light district and it's like K-pop looking boys instead of like girls hanging outside of waiting to get picked up or something like that. So it's a really fun and interesting concept. Also, if you're a fan of manga, the manga is incredible. I would highly recommend that. Number three is Oshinoko. A lot of people are decisive on this one, but I'm a huge fan of meta commentary in anime. A lot of times we don't get this in anime, and everything about Oshinoko I absolutely love, and I'm only strictly speaking about the anime. There's some stuff in the manga that has came up, and I'm not going to touch on that, but just sort of how it viewed the idol and entertainment industry was really well done. Number two, Vinland Saga. If you want character development and a character-driven story, Vinland Saga, especially the second season, the Farmland arc, was absolutely incredible. The voice acting of Thorfinn's character like really took my breath away. It was some next-level stuff. And also, my number one, a Netflix anime that came out really late in 2023, but I recommend everybody to go check it out, is called Pluto. It's a predecessor to Astro Boy. And it touches on a lot of topics that are currently happening in the world. Whether you agree with them or not, I think the discussion around Pluto is how it handles a lot of topics about AI. It also handles a lot of topics about something similar to like Israel and Palestine. So there's those themes in Pluto that I think, regardless of what you think, it handles both sides, I think, in incredibly well storytelling moments, along with just being a fantastic sci-fi action show. So that's my top 10. Tony.
Oh boy, let's go here. I'm gonna start off with Dr. Stone. I really enjoy this show. I mean, you have a delightful cast of characters kind of learning how to remake the world that's kind of been turned to stone and trying to replicate modern technology using old things and trying to get everything together. The cast is really incredible. I love Senku, I love Chrome. The interaction between the two, they're really perfect for each other. You have Senku, who's this incredible genius, and you have Chrome, this Stone Age kid that's like so inquisitive and incredibly excited about science and everything like that. And a lot of the science in the show actually kind of sort of works, which is sort of surprising. Like, there's science consultants who work on it, and I highly recommend that. And now I have another Pete classic here with Link Click season 2. Technically it's a Danhwa.
Yep.
So basically the whole premise of Link Click is we have these two characters, Chen-Chi and what's the other one?
Guang.
Lu Guang. There we go. That's it. So one can enter photos, and the other can observe him, and they try to solve mysteries without trying to change the result of the photograph. It's really well executed. I don't know if you have anything else you want to add on that.
If you like Steins Gate, you should watch Click Click.
Okay, yeah, I haven't seen Steins Gate. That's on my list, actually. But yeah, Spy Family, of course, number 8. For all the reasons he talked about there, there's a really incredible fight that's like probably my favorite of the year on top of the ship with all the fireworks going off with Yor. I especially loved the season with how it treated Yor and gave her a much bigger role. The entire cruise ship arc was one of the best things that I have seen this entire series do. But I have to give my number 7 here to Buddy Daddies. I don't know, how many of you have seen Buddy Daddies? Yes, okay. It's like Spy Family, yes. It's a ripoff, yes. But I love these two characters so much. And the Gremlin character is incredibly entertaining. You have the one dude who's like this kind of neat otaku guy, and you have another one who's more energetic and stuff, and they're assassins, and they have to try and keep this kid and try and maintain like a facade and things like that. So what did I say here? Number 6 is Zom 100. I think a lot of people kind of fell off this show, like with all the production delays and things like that. You had Studio Bug just like, oh, 1 week, we're gonna delay this a week. They got preempted by Olympics or something, or sports or something. And then eventually by the end, they're just like, hey, we're gonna have to delay the last 3 episodes until December. But if you haven't picked back up on Zom 100, those last episodes are really incredible and something that I highly recommend going back to check out. Of course, we have the 5th one here, The Boy and the Heron from Miyazaki. I really enjoyed this movie. I mean, I don't have a ton to say about it right now, but I feel like it's one of those that like kind of stirs over in my head. I don't know where it's going to end up ranking in a lot of the Miyazaki canon there, but one thing that really particularly sticks out to me is the animation of fire in that movie. It is truly remarkable and some of the most incredible depictions of fire that I have ever seen in any medium. Next up, I had Scott Pilgrim Takes Off, another Netflix anime. I'm a big Scott Pilgrim fan. I love the graphic novel and I love the movie. And the anime is an entirely different beast. I'm not really gonna say what happens at the end of episode 1, but it's not what you expect at all. And it is so much better for it. I was shocked, really. I couldn't believe what they did. But they really pulled it off in a great way. And they got the original movie cast back for it, and it's really good stuff. I definitely recommend that. Number 3 I have is one that is stuck in the Disney prison. It's Heavenly Delusion. This is an interesting show because it's telling 2 different parallel storylines at the same time. You have the cause of an event and then the after effects of it. And the way they kind of twist and turn and merge them together is incredibly intriguing. And it's a really good mystery. If you like kind of sci-fi type stuff, highly recommend that. Yeah? Yeah?
Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah, okay, cool. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, apparently, yeah, we would say Disney. Everything that comes on Disney will come here on Hulu.
Yeah, it's on Hulu, but I watched it because I have Hulu through Verizon, and the first randomly inserted ad break, I was like, nothing. I went to the local DVD shop, if you know what I mean. okay, so this is another one that I don't see a lot of people talk about.
It is Undead Girl Murder Farce. So basically, you have this you have a crew. It takes place in the alternate history Meiji era, and you have a half oni, demon slayer, half oni, half human demon slayer, and they go around solving supernatural mysteries with a severed head in a cage, and her handler, and you eventually get like a mishmash of all sorts of public domain characters. Like Dracula shows up in there. You got Arsene Lupin. You got Sherlock Holmes. Yeah, it's an incredibly fun mishmash of all sorts of things, and like, it's a fun murder mystery, and I watched this all in like 2 days. It was an incredibly fun ride. And number one for me, of course, is Pluto. Another series that I was looking forward to, and after you were raving about it, I was like, oh my god, I should really check this out. And yeah, it does not disappoint. This is the only anime I gave a 10 to last year, for good reason. Each episode is about 60 minutes long, but every single one just absolutely flew by for me. I love the dissections of AI, like you mentioned, the conflicts, the war stuff. And particularly that first episode, oh my god, that really made me cry. There's a really good story about a robot that does not want to go fight in wars ever again, and learning music and having his slave master be like, all you're good for is killing, you can't feel anything. And it was incredibly heartbreaking and really well executed. But yeah, I cannot recommend Pluto enough. It's one of the best anime series I've honestly ever seen. Okay, that's enough talking for me. My gosh.
All right, now it's on to my top 10. I do have a bit of a rule for myself where, like, I try not to include, like, second seasons or continuations, because otherwise I would have stuff like Dr. Stone or Spy Family Season 2 on there, because they're really great. My rule is, like, if you aired in 2023, you're fair game, even if you didn't finish, but as long as you have to start airing in 2023. So first off, I got a couple of rom-coms that I kick off my list of. First one is My Love Story with Yamada-kun at level 999. I discovered the series just by hearing about it through people on Twitter, and also just like stumbling upon the OP done by Kanagun, which is like such a banger of an opening, and I just decided to get into it because of that. And I really did grow to like this. Like, it's probably not my favorite, you know, rom-com I've ever seen, but it's very cute, and a lot of it is held together by the main girl, Akane, who starts off the series by being broken up by her boyfriend, and she's just like so distraught. She wants to find someone else because, you know, she hates to be alone, and she happens to find Yamada-kun, who happens to be member of her party in this MMO that her ex-boyfriend got her into, that she still continues to play out of pure spite, really. But it's very nice, and I'll admit their relationship kind of does feel a little one-sided. It mostly seems like it's Akane kind of doing most of the work, but you know, when it really hits, it really hits. Like, there's specifically an episode where Yamada is helping Akane fix her laptop, and it leads to kind of a really cute moment where they just like stare deeply into each other's eyes, and I'm just all like, okay, you won me over again. I was a little iffy, but I still like it. And you know, even if it didn't have that relationship, it still has Akane. She's amazing. She's a wonderful girl failure, and I love her. And the next one is Tomo-chan is a Girl, which my buddy Ryan introduced me to it because he read the manga before I did. But this series follows a girl named Tomo, who is best buddies with a boy named Jun. They've been best friends ever since they were little kids. And she's a tomboy. But she tries to be seen as more of a girl. She wants to be more feminine and be seen as more feminine by her friend June, because as the series goes on, she starts to develop feelings for him. But he's so incredibly dense, and it's just all like, hey, you're just my buddy. We're always going to be buddies, right? And it's a lot of fun just seeing these two just kind of like go through like just different wild antics while trying to navigate this relationship. And one thing that also puts this series over for me is the side characters, like specifically Tomo's best friends, Misuzu and Carol. Like, I look at them and I just wish, like, man, I would love a spin-off series where it's just those two just like hanging around and just like trying to be best friends. And an interesting thing about this series is that both in English and Japanese, Carol is played by the same actress, Sally Amaki. So like she plays her in Japanese and then also in English as well, which I think is really amazing, and she does like a real bang up job.
I can't think of any other instance of that.
Yeah. And going from that, we have Hidogawa Sky Pretty Cure, or Soaring Sky Pretty Cure. It is the season to celebrate the 20th anniversary of the Pretty Cure franchise, which started in 2004. And I won't go too deep into this because I'm going to be talking about this in about an hour or so. But I really enjoyed the season. This felt like a big celebration of Pretty Cure's 20 years. And they also celebrate this milestone by really kind of shaking up the formula in certain places, you know, just like, you know, say, like, adding a Precure who's a boy, or adding a Precure who's an adult, you know, to represent the fact that, you know, we do have fans that are boys who watch the show, we do have adults who have been here since the beginning who watch the show, to kind of give a little shout-out to them. And it's just a really fun series. Like, Precure is just always great, and, like, even when it's at its weakest, I still really enjoy it. And the next one I want to talk about is Magi Revo, or... Okay, I'm going to say this full title. It's a bit of a mouthful. Bear with me. The Magical Revolution of the Reincarnated Princess and the Genius Young Lady. Try saying that 5 times fast. But this is our first real Yuri of my list right here. And this is a series where it's like... It's funny, really. Like, for the longest time, I always look at Isekai and go all like, yeah, this is just dumb otaku garbage, but like... I look at this and I'm just all like, oh, it could actually be good. And the fact that they kind of, they don't really dwell on the isekai fact for the most part. And the thing that really holds this series together is the two main characters, Yuffie and Anis. And I just gotta say, they are really, really cute together. I just love how the relationship builds, where like, Anis is trying to like, you know, build up Yuffie, you know, something happens at the start of the series where like, a lot of people lose faith in her. And Anis is like, hey, I want to make sure that the people of the world see Yuffie as amazing as I see her, and also how that builds and builds into a romantic relationship, which I think is amazing, mainly because at the start of the series, Anis is very, like, she's, like, constantly trying to riz up Yuffie, going all like, hey, baby, but, like, by the end of the series, she just saw the roles reverse, which I think is very funny and cute. And moving on from that is Frieren, which, you know, everyone knows Frieren. It's like one of the biggest hits of last year, and for good reason. It's one of the things I liked about it is the fact that, you know, with most fantasy anime, whether it be fantasy or isekai or what have you, the main goal is like, okay, we gotta build a party together and defeat the Demon King. What I like about this series is the fact that at the start, they've already done it. Like, the series deals with the aftermath of, like, you know, what happens with the hero party that saves the world from the Demon King, and like just seeing how the world changes after a while, because Frieren, she's an elf, she's practically immortal, she lives for thousands and thousands of years, and it's basically her starting to, you know, she spent most of her life just kind of like, you know, just going through life, just going through different adventures over and over, meeting different people, different parties, and she's never really learned to appreciate them. And after the death of one of her party members, Himmel the Hero, she starts to reassess things a little bit, starts to realize, oh, I need to slow down a bit. I need to appreciate life, which is, it's really, really beautiful. And the whole series is just about, you know, understanding life, appreciating life, all the little moments, and, you know, just cherishing them and holding them to you. Like, I think it's just really, really a beautiful series. And after that, going straight into my top five, first up is Apothecary Diaries, which series takes place in kind of an alternate universe China. It follows this girl named Mao Mao, who is kidnapped and sold into slavery, basically, for the palace. And while she is there, she is basically like recruited to like help out with like little mysteries here and there that happen around the palace, because she's the only one who can understand a lot of the you know, medicines and medications, because a lot of these mysteries deal with like different kinds of poisons and whatnot. And also the fact that she's the only one who can really read out of all of them. But it's great following her. Like, I love how much of a gremlin she is, where like she gets so hyper obsessed with like just different poisons, different ingredients, and everything like that. And like, I also really love her relationship with Jinshi, one of the attendants in the palace, and just like how it builds up, where it's like, you know, it's another relationship where it's like one of them's trying to raise the other up, and the other one's just kind of like having none of it, which I just think is really cute. And I'm really excited for more of the announcement of season 2 that's going to be coming soon. And after that, if you look at that, it's going to be all one genre for the rest of it. So first up is Stardust Telepath. I think this is a very cute and underrated series. Like, the way I describe it, it's kind of like, it's a bit like Yuru Camp in a way, where it's like, has that very comfy, cozy vibe, but instead of camping, it's mostly about building rockets and like appreciating space. Follows this girl named Umika, who is struggling with making friends. You know, she's just very, very shy. And then one day, a girl named Yu Akeuchi, who claims to be an alien, you know, jury's still out on that, but she basically comes into her life and just basically opens up this whole new world where, like, she's able to, like, connect with others and meet new friends and able to, like, build a competency in herself. And I think it's a really beautiful thing. And the one thing I really love about this is that the original manga, like, the mangaka, she was inspired by this from working with children with mental disabilities. So, like, she used that as, like, inspiration for the series. And, like, if you look at a character like Umika, you can totally see, like, oh yeah, she is based on, like, real people that the mangaka has known. And going on to my number 3, if it's already obvious based on how I'm dressed, Bang Dream It's My Go, part of the Bang Dream Bandori series. And I will start this off, I am not the biggest fan of Bandori. Like, I kind of look at it and go, like, okay, it's just another cute girl just doing music, whatever. It's more basically like, it's basically like K-On, but like with more groups and whatnot. Like, I just look at that and go, like, okay, whatever. But My Go, like, me and a friend of mine, we just watched this kind of on a whim because we heard how good it was, like, and also how, like, you can jump into it without being a Bandori fan, and it just blew us away. Like, the way I can describe the series, it's like if you take K-On, and then you take Beck Mongolian Chow Squad, and then you combine it into one thing. Like, and you have the cute girls, they play music, but it's also focusing on the relationships between each of the girls, and, like, how they work together, how they don't work together, and how, like, some of them are only, like, in the group for their own personal gain. Like, it's very, very interesting, and, like, I love this for the characters. Like, one character in particular, the one I'm cosplaying right now, Soyo Nagasaki, like, basically became my favorite anime character this past year because how she appears, where it's like, you think she's the typical big sister type who's there to, like, keep everyone together, but as the series goes on, you start to realize that there's a little more underneath the surface to her, and it turns into, like, a really, really good thing. And also, I just love her relationship with the character named Anon, and also just the music. Music's fantastic, and another thing about the series, it's all CGI. Which, you know, some people might hear that and go all like, ew, CGI, what? But it's done very, very well. It's kind of done in the Beastars kind of way, where it's like mostly CGI, but when you have like close-ups and stuff, it goes to the 2D hand-drawn. And also, because of that direction style, they were able to do some creative things. Like, for example, the third episode is done entirely through a character's POV. Like, we are watching all the events through what a certain character sees. And, like, you can only really do that with something like CGI, where you can, like, have the camera go around wherever you want it to go. And also, with this series, music anime, music's fantastic. Like, I listen to a lot of those tracks just by themselves. And the next one after this is Yuri Is My Job, or Wanna Yuri for short. I credit this series for getting me into this big Yuri kick that I've been on since the end of 2022. Basically, it follows a girl named Hime who puts on this facade of being like, oh, I'm the cutesy girl, I want everyone to love me and everything like that. But, you know, deep down, she's like, she uses it to kind of like hide her own insecurities and whatnot. And like, this eventually leads her to joining this cafe called Bibe, where basically the whole purpose of it is that it's a role-play cafe where everyone is all role-playing classic Yuri, class S, you know, stereotypes, you know, like, oh, Onee-sama, I love you, I will be with you forever, that kind of thing. And it's just, the thing I love about this series is the fact that how they kind of juxtapose the whole class S stereotypes and then, like, you know, real-life relationships where, like, you know, stuff that you read in manga or whatnot, like, that's not how it works, that's not real life, and we actually get to see, like, how these real-life relationships go, and, like, it's probably one of the most, like, realistic depictions of, like, some of these, of, like, characters that I've ever seen. Like, I look at some of these characters and go, like, I felt the same way as you have felt before. You know, I've I feel jealous about some people, about, you know, a person hanging out with someone that I'm really into, or like, I've also felt pain of like, you know, I don't know how to read people or read a room or something like that. It's just like, I can't really understand, and I really want to understand. Like, it's so good. It's one of my faves of this past year. But the number one fave for me, I'm in love with the villainess. My number one Yuri that I've read, number one anime of this past year. Follows a girl named Ray Taylor who gets isekai'd into this video game world called Revolution after dying from overworking. And there she meets the villainess of the video game, Claire Francois. And in the game, Claire is meant to be just basically like an obstacle for you, because the point of the game is to, you know, romance one of the three princes of this school. But Ray, she has no interest in any of the princes. She wants the villainess. She wants Claire. So from like moment one, she's just all like, Miss Claire, I love you, and just spends most of the series just like trying to get her to fall in love with her. And it's just really funny. It's very cute. One of the things that really helps it is the dub of the series. Like, shout out to the voice actors, Hannah Alvia and Lindsay Shepherd as Ray and Claire. Like, they do fantastic jobs as these characters. And one of the other things that I like about the series is the fact that, you know, Yuri anime series that also doesn't shy away from, you know, talking about, like, homosexuality. Like, the entire third episode has, like, a scene where, like, the characters have, like, a deep discussion about, you know, what it means to be gay. Like, what it means to just, like, you know, fall in love. Like, what it means to be in love and, like, be in love with the kind of people that you want to be in love with. And it's actually, like, it's amazing because, like, you, like, not a lot of, like, anime like this ever, like, just takes a moment to, like, talk about it and, like, you know, just, like, how people, like, have to deal with, like, you know, some of the prejudices in the world. Like, I think it's really, really amazing. And also, it feels like it comes from a personal place because, you know, Inori, the original writer, like, she is a queer woman. She has a girlfriend. So, like, you can tell, like, a lot of those conversations about this kind of stuff. And in later volumes of the light novels, like, they come from a very personal place. And I just really appreciate the fact that a series like this takes the time to talk about this. And also, just in general, like, I love the relationship between Ray and Claire. They are, like, one of my all-time favorite couples in recent memory. So, cool. Yeah, that's my top series.
All right, we got 8 minutes where we'll try to run through the stuff real quick. I have one more trivia question for you. Raise your hands if you know it. We got a couple prizes left. Kaicho Saito has directed 2 anime, the Monster 2023 hit Free Ren, Beyond Ray's End, and this 2022 instant classic. It is Bocchi the Rock. Pretty amazing that your first 2 anime that you directed are 2 just absolute monsters.
Insane.
We have a few prizes left. Does anybody want to share their favorite anime for 2023? If you do, you can pick over a leftover prize. If not, we can stand.
Yep, any of these.
Delicious and Dungeon. It's not
okay.
Done yet, but cool.
Also, then start in 2023.
If you want the DVDs, you can take both.
It's okay.
I enjoyed Freerun because it's. Kind of made everyone realize, hey,
you still got a prize.
Fantasy's really good.
Yes, Free Run's incredible. You the back.
Shangri-La.
Oh, God.
Yeah, technically. Yes. Yeah. Very, very fun game style. I like it. Right. Like Shangri-La a lot.
Yeah.
YouTube.
Pluto.
Yeah.
Yes.
I didn't know you could do that with Astro.
That's 3 Pluto. So if you haven't watched Pluto.
Pluto is the de facto winner.
You will know immediately after the first episode if you like Pluto or not. Keep grabbing prizes. We have like 2 left.
Got 2 stuff left.
If anyone wants a prize. I saw someone with their hand up.
There's
one. I'll allow it.
It's
Wano ending. We had 2 huge fights with
Year 5, baby.
Year 5 and then King versus Zoro.
King versus Zoro and Queen versus Sanji. Yeah.
I got one. Reborn as a vending machine, I now wander the dungeons.
He's trolling.
I read the book.
That show sucks. anybody else before we move to our last panel?
Yeah.
You.
I think I'm good.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, that's respectable.
Yeah. As someone like me, I'm not even a fan of Gundam at all, and G-Witch captivated me. Like, I loved it. Anybody else want to share their thoughts for 2023? You in the back.
Yuri is my job.
And if you like podcasts, I just did an episode on it.
I would like to second Boy and Aaron. I think it's a really good addition to the
Agreed. She sent the Boy and the Heron. That was probably my favorite movie from last year. That and Susan May were up there. We got 5 minutes left. So, anime that we are looking forward to that you need to put on your radar. This is either coming out next year or it's just announced for the future. The first one I'm looking forward to is a show called, or a manga called Witch Hat Atelier.
Yes.
If you're a fan of Frieren, Witch Hat is one of, if not the best fantasy manga I've ever read. It also has some of the best paneling in manga I've ever read. It's like next level stuff. It deals with a lot of cool themes along with, like, for instance, using fantasy for disabilities. So, like, for instance, there's like a paralyzed person and they use magic to get around. And it's just an incredible, like, series that if you thought Frieren blew up, I don't think it's going to be the same level as Frieren, but I do think that this is going to be a huge player going forward in the fantasy. And we're sort of seeing this fantasy boom with Frieren and Delicious and Dungeon. And then I think coming into it, hopefully this year, is Witch Hat Atelier. And my next one, I don't even play this game, but I think it's going to be insane, the Genshin Impact anime.
Oh, that's happening?
I didn't know this.
I have no clue what Genshin Impact is. However, it's been done by Ufotable, so the...
Whoa. Oh, my.
And it's also been announced that it's like 64 episodes. So
yowza.
It's going to be like... I mean... Think about how many people play Genshin, and that's going to get people into anime. So I just think it needs to be on people's radar just because of the studio.
Yeah.
And sort of how popular the franchise is. So I don't think this is going to get me into playing Genshin, but I am intrigued to see kind of the lore behind it. Because, I mean, you walk around here and you see Paimon cosplays and you see other Genshin cosplays. I think that's just really cool. So, Tony.
Okay, this is all, a lot of these are going to be hopeful sometime, eventually shows here, but Uzumaki is the thing I am most looking forward to. I haven't read the manga, but I do like Junji Ito, I do love the art, and the trailers that they have put out have been out of this world unbelievable. I cannot wait to see how the hell they do this. I mean... I know that people are like, oh, it's never coming out. Nah, dude, just let them cook. Let them take as long as they need for this. This is going to be, I think, something incredible. Next up, we have another one that I don't know if it's actually coming out this year. We have Lazarus, which is an incredible collaboration here. We have directed, of course, Shinichiro Watanabe. And then it's also being worked on by Chad Satelsky or whatever, the director of the John Wick series.
What?
Yeah. And music is going to be done by Kamasi Washington.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, that's coming from MAPPA and Adult Swim. So it'll be, that is an incredible collaboration that I really need to see, like, now. Next up, we have the Mononoke movie. Okay, yeah, so Mononoke movie, that's a really cool underrated series from the past about a wandering medicine man who goes around and fights ghosts and spirits. Dr. Stone, obviously, more Dr. Stone, and Dandadan, that's coming from Science-Saru, and I am an extreme Science-Saru simp, and I will watch anything that they put out. Mikey.
All right. So the biggest ones I'm looking forward to, first one is probably going to be premiering in the next week or so, Whisper Me a Love Song. It's a series that I've been hearing a lot about from a lot of the folks I follow on Yuri Twitter, following the story of a girl who is in a rock band. She meets another girl who comes in and says that she loves her, but when she says that, she only means she loves her for her music. So the girl in the band is like trying to get her to fall for her for real. And another music anime that I'm going to be looking forward to is Love Live Superstar Season 3. I love season 2. I love the group Liella, and season 2 I would say is probably the best Love Live season I've seen since OG Love Live season 2, so I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to seeing the new characters interact with the rest of Liella. And another music anime I'm looking forward to is the continuation to Bang Dream Maiko is Bang Dream Ave Mujica, following the story of the girl Sakiko as in Maiko. We see her slowly forming this group called Ave Mujica, and the series is going to be following, like, you know, her band, like her relationship with like her band members and everything like that. So I'm looking forward to that. And one of the biggest ones, I'll save that for last, one that I'm hopeful that'll air this year is the Mahoutsukai Pretty Cure sequel. I recently finished Mahoutsukai Pretty Cure. I think it's a good season and I'm looking forward to seeing more And hopefully it's better than the other adult precure that we got, Lieutenant Precure, which followed the S5 group, which ended off on a pretty weird note. But hopefully this one's good, and I also just want to see more of Mofuru, my favorite little teddy bear. And the biggest one I'm looking forward to, that the announcement threw me by surprise, the sequel to Modica Magica Rebellion, Modica Magica Vulpurgus Nock Rising. I love Madoka. I am all in on whatever again Orobuchi's gonna be doing. I've been waiting for a sequel to Rebellion for years now, and I'm glad it's gonna be coming out, and I am hopeful he'll find a way to kind of like end the series off on a high note.
Nice.
Sweet, thank you guys, that's it.
That's it, we did it.
Oh, let me... Hey, there's